Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and my co-host today is Dave Allen. We're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Thursday, September 9th, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and happy National Teddy Bear Day. Have you hugged the teddy bear today? I know. And did you know that on this day in 1776, Congress renamed our country from the United Colonies to the United States of America? It's all true. And that's what you'll always get from Discount Gold and Silver Trading, ladies and gentlemen. Truth and honesty.
Well, Ruby is my teddy bear.
And very huggable indeed.
She is a huggable little mutt. She's not even a mutt. She's a Welsh Terrier, but she's still a mutt.
She's a huggable.
She looks like a teddy bear.
She does.
She looks like one. But anyway. Huh?
Feels like one, too.
She looks like one, feels like one, but she does not act like one.
Not quite as quiet.
Not quite as quiet. And but gold wasn't quiet. It started to pull out here later in the afternoon. We did hit over 1,800 at one point today. So right now in the New York spot price aftermarket, we're up 740, the 1,797. Silver's up 13 cents at $24.15. Platinum was down 5 at 978. Palladium was down 81, 2,200. And 59. The USDX today, let's see, was down 0.21, 92.49. Crude oil was down $1.27 at 68.03. And the paper markets today, no big deal. Dow was down 151 points, but it was the fourth straight day for the Dow, 34,879. The S&P was down 20. 4,493. The NASDAQ was down 38 at 15,248. Let's see what Europe did overnight. It was a mixed bag with the FTSE being down a little over 1%. Asia looked at like everything was down except the Shanghai, and that was just up fractionally. 10-year yield, 1.297. So that was a pretty big drop. 0.043 to be exact. And that's pretty much it. I don't know if we're going to be talking about natural gas prices, but they continue to rise and could be the most expensive in 13 years this winter. So if you heat your home with natural gas, and you know what, Dave, it always cracks me up. They pushed natural gas like it would be the cheaper than power and electric, and you know, it was the greatest thing, you know, it was the greatest thing since popcorn, and that's just not the case anymore. I always thought natural gas was less expensive. Maybe in some areas it is, but someone told me a couple years ago that's like, no, my gas bill is actually higher than my electric bill. So it is kind of interesting.
It certainly ain't too cheap to meter. That's for sure.
So again, just they'll just ram something down your throat, telling you how cheap something's going to be, how less expensive it will be, and it just ends up costing you more and more money. So everybody changed out. Oh, everybody's going to have natural gas. Everybody's going to have natural gas, and here it is. How much better is it really? So. Anyway, it's Thursday day. We have the jobless claims. Oh, boy, I'm so excited.
Good.
They dropped. Woohoo! 310,000 last week. And the lowest of this era, or this new era, and a significant step toward the pre-pandemic normal. Claims had been expected to total 335,000. For the week ending September 4th. And the total for the week represented a substantial drop from the previous week's 345. And maybe people went back to work because their benefits were running out. Maybe they acted, you know, I don't know. What say you, Dave?
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I think it's going to take a few weeks to pan out, but certainly by, where are we, second week in September, I'm thinking by the last week of September, that jobs report, which will show a good 2.5+ weeks of the sort of post-pandemic benefit era, we should have a better idea of what's happening to all those people. I mean, continuing claims, which run a week behind the headline number that you mentioned, dropped as well, falling to just shy of 2.8 million. Relatively minor decrease of 22,000 from the previous week. That's also the lowest level since last March. The four-week moving average for continuing claims dropped as well to 2.84 million. So it does show that it's trending below that, and certainly by the end of the month we'll see that drop, I think, precipitously. I mean, total recipients under all unemployment programs declined to 11.9 million. It's a drop of 256,000. And it comes as federal extended benefits expired Monday. I remember that number totaled over 30 million a year ago. It's leading up this report. It's going to get a lot more interesting on Thursdays in the next couple of weeks. In the meantime, we should continue to see this continuing claims and total number trend downward. Although it'll be interesting, surely, to see the weekly jobless claims, given all these newer concerns about the rising variant.
Well, you know, even our Fed or our central bank isn't ready to slow down their asset purchases. They talk about it, but they haven't. The European Central Bank at least is keeping their monetary policy unchanged today, but opted to slow down the pace of their asset purchases under their pandemic emergency purchase program. They had to have an emergency in order to pick up all those asset purchases.
Absolutely.
They just couldn't do that. So let's create one. The governing council voted to maintain the interest rate on the ECB's main refinancing operations, 0%. On the marginal lending facility, 0.25%. And on the deposit facility, -0.5%. The ECB statement read, based on the assessment of financing conditions and the inflation outlook, the governing council judges that favorable financing conditions may be maintained with a moderately lower pace of asset purchases. Kind of sounds like our central bank people, doesn't it, Dave?
Yeah, well, you know, ECB president Christine Lagarde said, this is interesting.
That I keep forgetting that's where she ended up at.
Yeah, the decision was unanimous, but unanimous, she says, in all respects, I guess, for each of those rates that you just mentioned. Now, the euro reacted slightly positively, gaining just 0.2% against the dollar right after the announcement was made. But again, the ECB, taking it from the Fed, says this may also imply a transitory period.
No.
Inflation is moderately above target. But Lagarde was sure to point out, using the words of former British PM Margaret Thatcher, the lady isn't tapering. I just love that phrase. We're not tapering, she said. We're recalibrating. Gotta love it. Just as we did back in December and back in March.
They really do think people are stupid, don't they?
Gotta love it.
Really?
None of them like to mince words, do they?
They really think we're stupid.
Anyway. Oh, my gosh.
Not so funny. Anyway, what else is in there? That should be a joke somewhere, but...
The lady isn't tapering. We'll have to remember that.
Yeah, recalibrating.
This will be like new equivalent of the fat lady singing. No offense to anybody there, but the lady isn't tapering until she is.
Well, you know, there are several U.S. airlines that are lowering their financial forecast, Dave. Of course, you know, they're citing weaker bookings. United Airlines said weaker revenue will mean adjusted pre-tax losses in the third and fourth quarters of this year. Now, they're out of Chicago, and they said they're based there and said in July and expected to post pre-tax profits for that period. They plan to further trim capacity this year because of weaker demand. United said the spike in COVID cases over the summer, however, has had less of an impact on demand than previous increases in infection rates. So, and you usually do see air travel fall a little bit in late summer. You know, we have schools reopen. But airline executives in recent weeks have warned that the fast-spreading variant has worsened the drop in demand. I think they're bucking up for another bailout. But anyway, so.
Just wait.
Yeah.
Just wait. It's coming.
It's coming.
You know, American Airlines said its third quarter sales will likely be down by as much as 28%. And that's down from a previous forecast of 20% drop. Southwest said it's logging weaker bookings and higher cancellation rates. Delta said it will likely post pre-tax profit in October, though it forecasts revenue at the lower end of its forecast range. So they're talking now about a 90-day, 3-month plus to, I guess, return to an upward swing in bookings. That would take us into the new year in the heart of the winter. So we'll see if that pans out, Melody.
Yes, we shall see. We hear a lot of times in the news about one corporation over, you know, a different one where, you know, they'll, oh, we're giving all these bonuses to this, you know, and if you read a little bit further, they're laying other people off or they nothing comes out of their pockets. They recalibrate.
Yeah, right, there we go. I love the new word.
And Walmart is pretty much doing the same. And I think this is wrong. Walmart will end their quarterly bonuses as it raises hourly wages for store employees and other workers. When bonuses you think that you get if you work hard, you know, you're working towards that bonus. I mean, you usually just don't get bonuses just for showing up and doing your job. It's a pat on the back, job well done. You know, instead of just doing 80%, you're doing 115% you're giving back. So bonuses are good. It's supposed to stimulate the worker, you know, to encourage and for doing a better job. So, hey, let's just eliminate the bonuses. Eliminate that incentive and just give everybody the same wage. So you can just sit back and just be this. You don't have to work hard anymore. You just get the same old wage. And that's what they're doing. They're eliminating their quarterly bonuses. And a company spokesperson confirmed that the big box retailer is eliminating the additional pay next January and rolling it into its worker base pay. The bonuses, dispersed 4 times per year, have been paid out for decades. Now, Walmart announced that the pay structure in a memo to employees last week. The spokesperson, Ann Hatfield, said that the change will make compensation more consistent and more predictable. Yeah, we don't want to have employees that have incentives to do better. Heavens no, not that in this country, Dave. Don't want to do better.
Yeah, that's an interesting move there. The announcement comes a week after Walmart announced it would raise its lowest starting wage to $12 an hour. I believe that's up from 11 or 11.50. It said that amount would amount, well, it says at least a dollar increase for more than 565,000 store workers. Apparently, its average hourly wage in the U.S. anyway is now $16.40. Walmart has been lagging behind other retailers like Target and Amazon that had already hiked their starting pay to at least $15 an hour. Walmart has emphasized other benefits, however, like a program that covers the cost of college tuition and textbooks for employees. Speaking of which, Melody?
You know what? I'd like to see what they actually paid out in their bonuses four times a year versus increasing the wage. I'd like to see what the, you know, how much is it really costing them? Or is it actually costing them less? You know, heaven forbid you can't do both. Heaven forbid you can't raise your employees' hourly wage to $16.40 and still give them a bonus. Oh, heavens no. Good gracious. Anyway, Amazon, this is the same thing. You know, they're talking about they upped the offer today by offering to pay 100% of college tuition for its 750,000 U.S. hourly employees. The e-commerce giant is following the lead of other large U.S. companies. It's a perk. Education benefits were all usually always there. It really isn't something new. I mean, I worked a lot of years in the insurance business, and education was, I mean, it was always encouraged. And they always paid for it. Amazon said that it will cover the cost of college tuition fees and textbook for hourly employees in its operation network after 90 days of employment. It'll also begin covering high school diploma programs, GEDs, and English as a second language certification for employees. English as a second language? Operations workers include employees in Amazon's sprawling network of warehouses and distribution centers. And previously, they had offered 95% of tuition fees and textbooks. But we see this with Target also does that. And it is a good thing. And we're done with this article, so we'll be back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TruthAndEducationRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Well, I don't know, talking about somebody's image is a good thing, Dave. You want to talk about North Korea's Kim Jong-un and his and his physical
appearance?
Well,
let's say to the extent it's raising eyebrows and turning heads, you know, in a certainly in a cultural sense, it's news, and perhaps even on a in a political sense, it's even more so. North Korea recently held a big parade showcasing military dogs and its virus workers in orange hazmat suits. That's amusing. But head, its rogue leader, quote-unquote, Kim Jong-un, still managed to seize the spotlight by emerging from a months-long hiatus, apparently looking thinner and more energetic than he has in years. Now, during this event late yesterday, Kim, who was wearing a cream-colored suit and a shiny white tie, emerged as the clock struck midnight. He beamed in response to thunderous applause from the performers and spectators who were filling Pyongyang's brightly illuminated Kim Il-sung Square. This is named after his grandfather, the country's founder. Photographs had him smiling widely, waving to the crowd, kissing children who presented him with flowers before he took his spot on a balcony to, yes, observe the parade. He laughed vigorously, Melody, and applauded the marchers throughout the event while holding animated chats with senior officials, probably just showing off all that new energy he has. Well, it was a stark change from 2018, when TV footage showed him struggling to catch his breath while accompanying South Korean President Moon Jae-in on a short hike to North Korea's Mount, I almost said peekaboo, the Paektu, during a period of diplomatic engagement. Moon, who's about 30 years older than Kim, didn't seem fazed by the walk at all. Now, Kim's weight loss came noticeable in June when he made his first public appearance in weeks to convene a ruling party meeting. Some North Korea watchers then said that Kim, who's about 5'8", has previously weighed over 300 pounds, may have lost as much as 40 pounds or more. Most experts say Kim's weight loss is more likely a result of efforts to improve his shape than an indicator of any potential health problems, although we'll remember there was a period of time when he was out of view for 6 months when it was speculated that he was ill. But again, as I mentioned, it may also have a political purpose, because it's crucial for Kim to build an image as a young and vigorous leader who can navigate the very poor country out of trouble. And such image-making efforts would align with the latest parade there, which showcased civil defense units involved in efforts to rebuild the economy and communities destroyed by floods, and emphasized a domestic message for unity. There's one professor at the University of North Korean, what is that? At the University of Seoul, said that Kim, with his weight loss and cheerful demeanor at the parade, is likely to be trying to project an image of a normal statesman who engages with the public. The professor also said he's also a husband and a father of three children who's approaching his 40s, so it isn't strange that he would care about his health. Well, Kim's health is the focus of keen outside attention, as the 37-year-old hasn't publicly anointed a successor who would take control of the North's advancing nuclear arsenal, which is targeting its Asian rivals in the American homeland. Kim has been known for his heavy drinking and chain smoking and comes from a family with a history of heart problems. Both his father and grandfather both died of heart issues. As you like to say, Melody, words matter, but so do images. Now, who'd have thunk Kim Jong-un looking svelte? Well, that's this week's and is Levity is Golden.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't consider going from 300 and losing 40 pounds. I still wouldn't consider that svelte unless you were 6 foot five.
Yeah, everything's relative, I guess. Svelte might have been a poor choice of words. Less obese.
But, yeah, there's some interesting things going on. He's been quiet for a while, and you haven't heard. I mean, everything has been focused on so many other areas that, you know, he's probably kind of enjoying not being in the limelight for a while, or he's working on something. So, but I'm sure the Biden administration will get around to him sooner or later, just as they all do. Japan holds the 1/10 of the gold in reserve in the U.S. at 846 tons. In the first quarter this year, Japan's reserves ranked 8th in the world, plus it ranks 11th in world population with over 125 million. Now, those two figures alone explain why we should be interested in what happens in Japan. And one of the main candidates to be Japan's next prime minister said yesterday that the country needs a new type of capitalism. How do you you just change capitalism to socialism, and that's what they're talking about. How can you have a new type of capitalism to address income and social gaps? A protege of former PM Shinzo Abe promised a stronger Japan that can cope with enemy attacks, natural disasters, and, of course, the pandemics. Former Foreign Minister Kishida was the first to announce his candidacy to lead the governing Liberal Democratic Party and succeed outgoing PM Yoshida Suga. But whoever wins the September 29th party vote is almost certain to be the next government leader. Kishida announced his candidacy last week. He's kind of focusing on his economic policy, which he described as a shift from the neoliberalism and deregulation that begun in the early 2000s that since Japan has since adopted. You know, Dave, I really don't know. You know, they're kind of getting just as bad as everybody else over there. Or
well,
maybe they always were.
I think, yeah, that's what we're hearing and seeing a lot more of. You know, we talked last summer about, you know, some of the Wall Street, the too big to fail bankers talking about calling for a new type, a more just style of capitalism. And if you look
at
what,
socialism,
some,
that's what it is.
Some of them are saying is, you know, it's more government control of the means of production in many cases, or certainly the funding of these programs. Now, current PM Suga, whose popularity has plummeted over his government's handling of the pandemic, has announced he will not run in the race. The new party leader is virtually guaranteed to become prime minister because of the parliamentary majority held by the party and its coalition partner. Now, conservative former internal affairs minister Takaichi announced her entry into the race as well. She's seeking to become Japan's first female leader, though she is ranked low in the popularity surveys. There's a third possible candidate, Taro Kono, the cabinet minister in charge of vaccinations and a favorite in media surveys. She's apparently still preparing a formal announcement. So there you have it from the U.S.'s largest and closest ally in the Far East. We'll see what happens and certainly keep you updated on this story as it gets closer to the party elections at the end of the month.
All right. You know, we talked about the billions of dollars that they're trying to funnel over to the IRS and all the looking for additional workers and so forth. Well, I guess they need to get some that know how to do math. Mm-hmm. There's been a recent flood of math error notices from the IRS. The IRS sent 9 million such alerts from January 1 through July 15th, up from about 630,000 in the same period last year. And about 7.4 million were related to stimulus payments. Just resolving the problem is a massive problem in itself. This is according to Larry Harris, a certified financial planner and director of tax services at Parsec Financial in Northern Carolina. As of August 27th, there was a backlog of 9.2 million unprocessed individual returns.
Jeez, that's bad.
You know, like, what do they do? What do these people do? 220, including 2020 filings with errors. One of the biggest issues they have is the reconciliation of stimulus payments with multiple payment options and limited tracking. There's been a huge number of discrepancies. Math error notices typically reflect an adjustment to someone's account, such as a balance due or a smaller or larger refund. And, well, I guess you've been dealing with that type of a situation too, Dave.
Boy, I wish it were only that basic or small. My wife and I got one of these notices. Aside from the problem we've been having with one of our earlier returns, but this one that was a notice that said you owe $0.00. This is, I think, from our 2020, the most recent filing. And then it went on, it had some narrative in there. I don't have it in front of me, but it was right along these lines. You know, we've done a reconciliation of your tax return and the latest stimulus payment, and you either owe or entitled to a refund for the amount shown above, 0.00. So go figure.
What a waste.
Oh, my word. Yeah, how many, how many millions of those were wasted. But in any event, I mean, don't try calling the IRS about this, ladies and gentlemen. The IRS apparently received more than 167 million phone calls during this past filing season, but only 7% reached an agent. It's saying it's similar for the tax professionals. I mean, if you're a tax professional, you have a separate number to call. Now, there are a lot less of those calls, but still, apparently, a very small percentage of them are getting through. I know that I tried calling, I documented it probably 7 or 8 times, the 800 line, never having gotten through once. So I think I had like a cumulative, I don't know, might have been, what was it? It was less than 2 hours, but, you know, after a while you learn when they don't answer by the
100th ring.
There you go. They're not going to.
They're not going to. But that, you know what? That is really pathetic, 7%.
Gosh, yeah, well, they're down 33,000 employees since, compared to 2010 anyway. And
yeah,
even with staffing boosts right before the pandemic started, they're still below the 2010 levels. Now, you mentioned that proposed additional funding, $80 billion is what Biden White House is looking for. Can't imagine they're going to get that much. Maybe not even as anything close to that. But we'll see what it's going to take to get 50 votes for the $3.5 trillion budget plan.
Why don't they use some of that money instead of trying to chase all of those who have issues with their taxes and so forth, and fixing a little bit more of the processing system, so they can do, instead of 7%, maybe they can do, 10?
I know. I'm going to talk more about this the so-called tax gap and reverse tax gap in the next segment, talking about the millions of people that are owed refunds that aren't getting them. So there you go.
We only got a couple more minutes. I'm just going to touch on this briefly because, there's issues information coming out about how this administration is going to start fighting the trying to lower cost of prescription drugs. How many years have I heard this coming from every administration, from how many, decade or more? Every administration is going to fight prescription drug costs. They're going to plan to lower the cost. And what gets done? Nothing. And just remember, if they lower the cost of something, that means they're going to pick it up somewhere else. You're going to have to pay it somewhere else. And that's just the way the system works. It doesn't work any way else. And it's just a political pitch is what I agree on. And, you have different trade groups and things like that, but, if they're going to lower the drugs in one thing, you don't get the brand name, you get the generic name. And I really do not believe all generics are as good as the brand names. I've heard people who have issues and so forth. So maybe they're just a few. I've certainly have used generic drugs in the past and so forth, but when they seem to be fine, my dog gets generics.
Poor Ruby.
I know. She cost me, But they'll limit. Yeah, we're going to lower the cost on this, but you know what? You're not going to get this one. There's so much control in what you can and can't have. And the U.S. pays more in drug costs than any other nation in this country in the world. So we're heading into break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survivor. Just one more time.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TruthAndEducationRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's in the office this last segment. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Now, I want to pick on public officials gratuitously because, by and large, you know, they do a good job. And by and large, you know, the bulk of them are honest and want to make an honest wage living. But when things like what I'm about to talk about are reported in the news, I think it's important, you know, not to suggest that anything's going on that's bad or criminal, but certainly it just deserves disclosure for you to either do more research or to make up your own mind. Well, these latest government financial disclosures show that one of the Federal Reserve's largest internal critics of the risks in real estate was an active investor in that sector last year. The latest documents show that Boston Fed President Eric Rosengren listed stakes in four separate real estate investment trusts and disclosed multiple purchases and sales in those and other securities. The Boston Fed confirmed that Rosengren's trades were not conducted via a blind trust, but, quote, his investment decisions are consistent with the system's strong ethics rules and timeframes, unquote. Separate filings for Dallas Fed Chief Robert Kaplan, a former executive with Too Big to Fail Goldman Sachs, showed multiple $1 million plus transactions last year. He also happened to disclose a $1 million plus stake in the Kansas City Royals baseball team. The Fed slashed interest rates to zero last March as the quick pandemic spread took off and began buying $120 billion a month in treasuries and mortgage-backed securities to calm the financial markets. Rosengren, who has discussed his concerns in commercial real estate and public speeches, has also advocated for the Fed to consider scaling back its MBS purchases faster than treasuries to avoid overheating the housing markets. As a member of the Federal Open Market Committee last year, Rosengren would be party to staff briefings on the status of that market. He's a FOC voting member next year. As for Kaplan's trading activity, the Dallas Fed said, quote, all transactions were reviewed by the Dallas Fed's general counsel, who confirmed the transactions were in compliance with the bank's code of conduct, unquote. All 12 regional Fed banks have provided 2020 financial disclosures for their presidents. Most reportedly showed nothing unusual, with little or no trading reported last year other than what I just mentioned. So, interesting stuff. Now, as our elected officials debate how to best address a national debt approaching $30 trillion while simultaneously increasing spending levels and addressing wealth inequality, it shouldn't be surprising that tax policy is at the forefront of that discussion. We talked about some of the proposals on the table late last week. And in this context, there's been especially an intense focus on the so-called tax gap. That's the amount of tax that taxpayers legally owe the government, but is not actually collected. The tax gap is a measurement based on estimates surrounding millions of taxpayers. It doesn't translate consistently, though, at the individual level. In fact, many people at all levels of taxable income embody what some have referred to as a reverse tax gap. These people overpay their taxes, often repeatedly, year after year. Given this phenomenon, while reducing the tax gap seems a laudable policy goal, reducing the reverse tax gap should also be prioritized, shouldn't it? But how? I mean, the IRS has long studied the tax gap as a way of measuring tax compliance. According to the IRS, estimates for 2011, 12, and 13 showed an average annual gross tax gap for all types of taxpayers, including individuals and businesses, of closing in on $500 billion, $441 billion to be precise. After late payments and audits, the net tax gap was about $381 billion, or $60 billion less. The IRS estimates that these numbers translate into a compliance rate of about 84%, or after its enforcement efforts, 86%. And that's led the IRS to conclude, perhaps surprisingly, that in general, the tax gap estimates dating back decades consistently show the U.S. quotes and the U.S. enjoys a relatively high and stable voluntary tax compliance rate. Importantly, however, while the country's tax gap is substantially smaller than it is in many countries, it may be increasing. IRS Commissioner Charles Rettig recently suggested to Congress that transactions involving cryptocurrency, for example, offshore transactions and illegal income as well, could eventually lead to a tax gap of more than $1 trillion if not adequately addressed. So there's logic in focusing on this tax gap, especially as overall tax receipts increase. It seems clear that as long as taxes fund our government's operations, we should enforce our tax laws, right? And enforcement is the job of the executive branch, namely the IRS. And the mission of the IRS is to, quote, provide America's taxpayers top quality service by helping them understand and meet their tax responsibilities and enforce the law with integrity and fairness to all, unquote. Well, perhaps it's that sense of service that leads to this interesting comparison. Just last year, fiscal year 2020, the IRS closed over 452,000 individual income tax examinations, yielding about $5.5 billion in recommended additions to tax. It's an average of about $12,200 per examination. Yet, 16,300 of its closed examinations on individual returns spanning the full spectrum of income levels resulted in recommended refunds of more than $813 million. Now, 16,000 examinations resulting in recommended refunds may not seem like a large overall number, but keep in mind, we're talking about a set of taxpayers and returns that were examined by the IRS. Presumably, they utilize their limited resources prudently, right? And focuses their audits primarily on questionable returns, most likely to lead to additional taxes. Yet, even within that select group, there were, in fact, thousands of returns in which the examined taxpayers overpaid their taxes to the tune of more than $800 million. So what does all this mean? The tax gap is real, but so too is the reverse tax gap. So while too many people underpay their taxes, there are just too many people who overpay their taxes, primarily because they just don't understand the tax laws, make mistakes, and or don't have access to professional assistance. The same can be said of the tax compliance industry. There are many outstanding tax professionals who proactively work with clients to make sure they're taking every available credit and deduction while reporting only the income required to be reported. There are also many tax professionals out there who function in a more administrative role, simply taking information from clients and inputting it into the appropriate tax forms. Well, the list is long, but among the most commonly missed opportunities or mistakes for individuals are these. Overpaying capital gains taxes because of improper tax basis calculations or lack of records. Not claiming available tax credits, especially the earned income tax credit for lower income wage earners. Not taking advantage of deductions for chattel contributions and business expenses. Failing to understand tax advantage accounts like IRAs, 401k plans, health savings accounts, and so forth. And paying too much in estimated and withholding taxes. The required solution to these problems are certainly more complex than most are willing to admit. I mean, we may indeed need more enforcement staff and thus money for the IRS, but we also need further investments in taxpayer and tax professional education and support. And what about a new approach to audits, huh? How about looking for deficiencies, but also looking for overpayments as part of the regular audit process? Better compliance technology, simpler tax rules, subsidies for professional tax advice, including restoring the deductibility of fees for such advice, should also be on the table. One way or another, focusing solely on the tax gap isn't enough. We've also got to address this reverse tax gap. Okay, well, the highly respected and closely watched Atlanta Fed's GDP Now forecast for the third quarter, it's been slashed by 41% since August 2nd. From 6.3% GDP growth the third quarter to 3.7% just a week ago. The next update to the Atlanta Fed forecast will occur tomorrow after the producer price index is released at 10 a.m. The Atlanta Fed's GDP Now model is the seasonally adjusted annual rate. It comes with this following caveat. GDP Now is not an official forecast of the Atlanta Fed. Rather, it is best viewed as a running estimate of real GDP growth based on available economic data for the current measured quarter. Sounds like a forecast to me. There are no subjective adjustments made to GDP Now. The estimate is based solely on the mathematical results of the model. Again, sounds like a forecast to me. Goes on, in particular, it doesn't capture the impact of COVID and social mobility beyond their impact on GDP source data and relevant economic reports that have already been released. Wow. Despite this dramatic deceleration in growth prospects for the economy in the current quarter, the following headline ran at Bloomberg News yesterday. Fed says growth downshifted slightly July to August, cites Delta. Downshifted slightly? Seriously? Did they read the numbers? From 6.3 to 3.7%? A reduction of 41%? I mean, talk about Wall Street misrepresentation. Bloomberg News report was based on the Fed's Beige Book, which looks at economic conditions across all 12 Fed districts. One sentence stands out in the latest Beige Book. Quote, economic growth downshifted slightly to a moderate pace in early July through August. Well, that entire sentence is a problem. The Atlanta Fed's GDP Now forecast for the third quarter took a dramatic turn for the worst from mid-August to the end of August, dropping from 6.2% on August 17th to 5.1% 10 days later. That's a deceleration of 18% in 10 days. Now, the Fed, where Jerome Powell would like to keep his job as chair when it expires in February, is now between another rock and a hard place. If it presents the hard facts on the ground, the Fed risks further dampening the mood of the consumers who represent 2/3 of GDP growth. And that mood's already pretty gloomy. I mean, take a look at the survey of consumer confidence from the Conference Board on August 31st, which dropped from a reading of 125 in July to 100, just shy of 114 in August. That's a big drop. And the Conference Board's report was downright cheery compared to the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index for August, which fell by 13% from July. That's the least favorable in more than a decade. The Sentiment Index has only recorded larger losses in six other monthly surveys since 1978. And they all come in the expectations index. And these expectations often become prophecy, self-fulfilling prophecy. Personal financial prospects continue to worsen due to smaller income gains, higher inflationary trends, consumers' extreme reactions because of the surging Delta variant, higher inflation, and slower wage growth. Ladies and gentlemen, only time will tell when the new normal will reveal itself. Stay tuned. We'll be here to tell you all about it. For now, that's the end of, well, all the time we have for today's show. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout of our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for listening to Financial Survival. Thanks to our engineer, Todd. Please have a good evening and be safe out there. Bye-bye. Bye.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the